Minister for Foreign Affairs Simon Coveney joins us now. And Minister, yesterday you thought you had a deal that would keep power sharing on the road in Northern Ireland. You were tweeting about a good day's work after the agreement on legislating for the Irish Language and Cultures Act. It's all in tatters this morning without even a North-South ministerial conference. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are politics in Northern Ireland can be very unpredictable. And yesterday, you know, the Secretary of State and myself and indeed other party leaders in Northern Ireland were were welcoming the fact that a new First Minister was appointed and Michelle O'Neill became reaffirmed as the Deputy First Minister. And it looked like we were going to have a plenary of the North-South Ministerial Council meeting this morning in Armagh. And it looked like, you know, we were moving on after a period of real disruption and change and uncertainty in the context of new leadership in the DUP. And then all of a sudden, that began to unravel, which was very unwelcome. And of course, now we have a lot of questions in terms of where do we go from here? Because leadership change is not something that the DUP does very often. You know, they've only ever had four leaders, you know, Ian Paisley, Peter Robinson, Arlene Foster, and Edwin Poots up until yesterday evening. So this is a party that doesn't change its leader very often, is not used to managing that, and of course, at a time of real pressure and polarization and uncertainty in Northern Ireland, the last thing politics in Northern Ireland needs now is the largest party in, you know, in a very divided and uncertain place, which is where the DUP are at the moment. So, I mean, from our perspective, we need to give the DUP space to respond to the challenges that they're facing. We know that the latest leadership contest, which resulted in Edwin Poots taking the leadership, was a very divisive one. We know the party was split virtually down the middle in relation to the vote between Edwin Poots and Geoffrey Donaldson. And, of course, the tension and divisions within the party in the build-up to the nomination of Paul Given to be First Minister was, you know, a step too far for many, in fact, a majority in the party. And so now we're back to square one, if you like, where the party has to find a way of electing a new leader that can unite the DUP, or at least attempt to. And that's important for politics in Northern Ireland, so that we have a First Minister and a leader of the DUP that we can deal with, negotiate with. We won't always agree with, for sure. But if you look at the challenges for Northern Ireland at the moment, from healthcare and the pandemic to the implementation of the New Decade, New Approach Agreement, to the issues around the protocol, to potentially a very tense summer in terms of a marching season, to North-South cooperation and so many other things, what's needed is stability and some predictability in Northern Irish politics. And, you know, you get it from much of the frustration that you're hearing from other political parties in Northern Ireland now, who simply want to get back to doing their job. And so, you know, I think now is a time to give the DUP some space to try to resolve these issues. But certainly it's, you know, it's adding to the list of real challenges that politics faces in Northern Ireland.
Given that Paul Given was elected First Minister against the wishes of most of his party, he was instructed not to go to the North-South Ministerial by the DUP Officer Board. Do you expect him to resign?
That's hard to tell. You know, it depends who you're listening to. And, you know, obviously we're trying to get as much information as we can. The DUP are remaining very tight-lipped in terms of their approach to the First Minister, and of course, electing a new leader, whether that will be by contest or whether they'll rally behind one name now, is hard to know. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in relation to Paul Given as First Minister. As of now, he is the First Minister in Northern Ireland. He's been selected and elected yesterday into that position. But of course, so much has changed in those 24 hours that you'd have to say there's a lot of uncertainty in relation to that issue.
Have you spoken to Brandon Lewis about what you do now, and does the Irish government expect that the deal that was at the heart of this row in the DUP, the deal on finally implementing the Irish Language and Culture Act that was agreed 15 years ago, reaffirmed 15 months ago, the DUP already signed up to it, but they didn't want to deliver it. Should the British government, will the British government still legislate on that introduction?
Yes, they will. So I spoke to Brendan Lewis last night. I mean, despite what many people might think, actually my relationship with Brendan Lewis is very good. We speak all the time. And even when I was abroad this week, we were speaking regularly and we were in regular contact in the build-up to yesterday. And we had a very long meeting in Lochearn last week when the British Irish Council was meeting as well. So, you know, the Secretary of State in Northern Ireland and the Foreign Minister in the Republic of Ireland need to be close and working together, particularly when there are difficult challenges to overcome. And we have been. And Brendan Lewis did the right thing here by committing to, if necessary, pass legislation in Westminster to deal with language and culture as committed to 18 months ago in the New Decade, New Approach Agreement, and as the British government agreed to do 15 years ago, if necessary. But the hope, of course, was that that wouldn't be necessary and that the Executive and the Assembly in Northern Ireland would be able to pass that legislation. Because don't forget, we agreed what the draft legislation would look like 18 months ago. There's nothing new here. This is simply following through on a commitment that was the basis of re-establishing the Executive in January of last year.
But you know that any new leader of the DUP is likely to have a mandate to go back and look for more concessions on that very package that you agreed.
That's true, except there's a written commitment from the Secretary of State and from the British government on that issue. So I don't expect that that's going to change. All of the other parties have accepted that. Even the UUP, Doug Beattie, is now saying, look, we should be legislating in the Assembly for language. That includes Ulster Scots as well as the Irish language, by the way. This was a balanced package on language and culture. It wasn't one-sided. And so I think it is the correct thing to do to legislate and manage that issue within Northern Ireland rather than having to outsource it to Westminster. But what Brendan Lewis has said, and he's correct, is to say if they're unable to do that, we've got to put a timeline or a backstop in place to ensure that if it doesn't happen in the Assembly in Northern Ireland, well, then the British government will effectively follow through on the commitments that have been made. And I think he was right to do that. You know, Edwin Poots didn't like that, but accepted it. But I think many in his party didn't and couldn't accept that. But I think that also is linked to the deep divisions within the party that stem back a number of weeks in terms of the end of Arlene Foster's leadership as well. And don't forget how divided the DUP have been for a number of weeks now. And this in many ways was a trigger rather than the only reason for what happened yesterday.
Are autumn elections now inevitable, which many observers think they were? For instance, the DUP advisor Lee Reynolds on Newsnight last night saying the mood in unionism is powerfully against devolution at this stage between the protocol and the Irish Language Act.
No, I'm not sure about that. I mean, you know, when you hear a number of the party leaders talking, many of them want to get back to focusing on doing their jobs.
But they need the DUP there too, don't they?
Of course they do. Of course they do. But I also think there are many in the DUP who will look at the interests of Northern Ireland here and determine that what's needed now is stability and political leadership as opposed to an election at a time of real polarisation and tension across Northern Ireland within communities and society. Now, don't forget the difficulties and the tension linked to the implementation of the protocol and the fallout from Brexit is still very live across Northern Ireland. And we all have an obligation to try to calm those tensions, to respond to genuine concerns, to show flexibility and pragmatism in terms of how that protocol is implemented. The EU understands that. The EU and the British government have an obligation to try to find a way forward on those things, and the Irish government has been very much involved in trying to do that. And I think the idea that we introduce an election in the middle of all of that, in the short term, which in some ways would be a referendum on the protocol and on some of the issues of division that we've seen, means that the election would be based on polarisation and division, as opposed to to focusing on policy change and governance to deal with the problems in Northern Ireland. And I think, you know, we have enough challenges right now without a very divisive, polarizing election in Northern Ireland. But that is what could happen if political leadership can't find a way of stabilizing things in Northern Ireland. Don't forget, we're not due an election in Northern Ireland until next May. And my, you know, my strong view is that if we can support the re-establishment of an executive that can focus on solving problems and working together, that is far preferable to an early election. And I think everybody should work towards that end.
And in stressing, Minister, stability, leadership, the importance of calming tensions, what then about your own party leader? And the criticism there has been of the timing of his remarks in a week of leadership change in the DUP, even though nobody could foresee what was going to happen yesterday. But the timing of his remarks, which many unionists have been very critical of.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it would be very wrong to link what happened yesterday afternoon in terms of the end of Edwin Poots's leadership with anything that the Taoiseach has said. I mean, these are entirely separate issues. You know, there has been a debate for some time now, accelerated in many ways by Brexit and issues around Brexit, amongst nationalism in Northern Ireland, around what the future holds for the island, how we can work together in partnership, how we can plan for the future, and what Leo Varadkar was doing, which is, by the way, absolutely party policy in Fine Gael and has been for decades, is being to talk about the reality that at some point in his lifetime, he thinks that he may see reunification on this island because the majority of people may want that. And we have to think about that and design what results from that by reaching out to unionism and different strands of opinion on the island. Because the approach to reunification that Fine Gael take is a far more inclusive one, far more generous one, far more modern one, we would say, than what some other parties are advocating for, which is aggressive and short-term and leads to fear and anxiety within unionism in particular. So, you know, the approach to this issue that Fine Gael wants to lead is one that actually reaches out and listens and accommodates difference as opposed to anything else. And that's the point that Leo Varadkar was trying to make this week. And I think if you read his speech in full, you'll see a big difference between the language that Fine Gael are using and some other parties are basing their vision for the future on.
Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney, thank you for joining us on Morning Ireland.